Thank you, Francis. I am Gertrude Brown, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. And I'd like to begin by thanking Clarence and the board for inviting me down here, or out here, or wherever it is, you know. And I never know what I'm going to say, or and I'll get it all bumbled up, and I might not ever get to AA or get out of jail or whatever, but but as I said, I am Gertrude, and I am an alcoholic. And by God's grace, and because this program works in my life one day at a time, with the help of a very firm but understanding sponsor, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink of alcohol nor any mood-changing drugs since June the 15th, 1970. And for this, I am deeply grateful. Because my life hasn't always been this way. It's just great to be sober. It's just great. I am a member of the Big Book group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I think it's the greatest group in the world. It's saved my life. I wouldn't have a life. And Alcoholics Anonymous is my life. Without it, I would not, and by all rights, I should not be standing before you today. I'm a miracle. Just a miracle. And my story, it's not pretty, and I'm not proud of it, nor neither am I ashamed of it. It's my illness, the illness, this incurable illness that I have of alcoholism. And you know, there's 14 promises in the big book, the bottom of page 83 and the top of 84. It tells me that if I'll do these steps, this program that's of recovery, the steps of recovery, if I'll do the first 9 to the best of my ability, that I'll know a new freedom and a new happiness. And I won't regret my past nor wish to close the door on it. And I know, and finding this peace and handling these situations, you know, that they just come and you handle them. That used to just baffle you, and I got drunk over them, and you get through them. But I was born and raised on a tobacco farm in central North Carolina, and to 2 loving parents in one of these fine Christian homes. 2 younger brothers. There were 2 years, and my life. And to me, I'm an instant alcoholic. Mama, I always heard that these men, I had a few uncles that drank, and Mama said they're just sorry, you know. And women didn't drink. This was something women didn't do. And you know, way back then, after taking this inventory, I had resentments as far back as I could remember, because I resented my mother, and I didn't have any little girls to play with, and these boys, 7 boy cousins and my 2 brothers, and she wouldn't let me go to creek with them, you know, and do these ladies didn't do this, and I resented the heck out of this, and all I wanted all my life was to grow up and do as I pleased and to do what I wanted to do, and life is not this way. I appeared to have friends, but I never had a friend until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I didn't want anyone to know about me. I had this one special friend, but I never trusted anybody. And I found out it was Gertrude I didn't trust. And I made good grades in school and seemed to be, you know, have a normal childhood, but I knew that this resentment toward my mother, I knew even then I wasn't supposed to feel this way about her. You know, and I loved my father. I don't talk about him much, but he'd give me anything that it was in his power to give me. I was spoiled, pampered life. I had my first drink of alcohol at the age of 14. And to make me feel important. And it did with these cousins that I was visiting, and we'd run across their father's fruit jar, you know, half a gallon fruit jar of white whiskey, and they poured out a glass, and we were being smart, and they dared me to drink it. And see, this, they were older than I was, and I drank, this was my first drink, about a water glass about full of white lightning. But this made me important, and I drank it, and I got drunk then, and how y'all, I got drunk every time in between. There was no successful drinking in my life. I could not drink. But as I said, they kept me away from the grown-ups for a while so that they wouldn't find out I'd been drink, you know, about it, because we would have had it. And but anyway, the opportunity came to get away from my mother when I was 16. I married a boy, a childhood friend that had grown up on adjoining farms. He was 18 and I was 16. And our backgrounds were the same, and just kids, and this marriage wasn't right. I think we stayed together about 3 weeks, and he joined the Army, and I went away to beauty school. And I had to hurry up and finish the school because Mama was paying for it, you know, and get on my own to do as I pleased. And there was no time for drinking. I wasn't around a drinking environment. And you see, this county, this Sanford, that I lived in, it was dry and there was no alcohol, and you either had to drive 26 miles to Southern Pines or go to the bootleggers. And in this little small community I lived in, there was nothing but a post office and a general, they make Sanford Brick and Tile Company there. They make this the brick center of the world, I think, colon. And the brick yard and the post office and the general store was all that was there. And not many people farmed, but we did. And I finished school, as I said, and went back to this husband, and he got kicked out of service, and he drank then some, and we'd argue about his drinking. I didn't drink, and a little girl was born, and a little boy, and I worked in this beauty shop in Sanford, and the two girls I worked with, they didn't drink, and I wasn't around a drinking environment. But anyway, one of the girls moved. She got a job at a larger shop there in Sanford and wanted me to go with her, and I did. And this boss was an alcoholic. And he was a great guy. It was about 12 of us worked there. And he'd offer us a drink, you know, when our last customers were under the dryer and we were getting off from work. And he'd just pour you a little bit in a glass, you know, and with some Coke. And he said, "Gertrude, you think you can drive home?" And I resented that, to think I couldn't take a little drink of whiskey. And then if you joined the club there, you know, the Moose Club, you could go there and get drinks. And my husband did, and we wanted to belong. And I always went to church. I was going to church, and sometimes in the afternoon he'd go by and get a Tom Collins. And this is about the only mixed drink I ever knew about. But on Saturday nights we'd go there, and in the beginning I didn't behave like these people, and I didn't know what was wrong with me, and I'd have to be carried home about 10 o'clock, you know, just when the dancing and the party got going. But I didn't dance, and I'd sit at the table, and somebody would sit there and drink with me, and I liked this feeling, and I wanted more and more and more of it, and I knew if the more I drank, the more I could, you know, and I never knew how to drink. And so it didn't take but a few weeks, and I'd be embarrassed about to go down that side of the street where these people had been at the club that Saturday night. And I'd wait about 2 weeks. I'd be ashamed and I'd feel guilty. And I decided right then that what I needed, I hadn't ever done any drinking, and I told my husband, I said, "If you'll get me some beer or a pint or something, you know, and let me stay home by myself and practice up and I'll learn how, and then I can drink like these other people." And y'all, I never learned how. But we kept this thing, and my drinking was always periodic, and I guess the only reason it wasn't daily, I couldn't get it and couldn't hold it but so long. because I developed this ulcer, you know, and I had this image set up. I was going to be the perfect mother. I wasn't going to be like my mother, and I've got a beautiful mother. There's nothing wrong with her. I carry these two little, this little boy and girl to Sunday school every Sunday so that mama can't take them. That's why I'm doing it, you know. And I just live a half a mile from my mother, just immature, just a child. Just getting to this program and trying to learn to grow up. And I'm still just a toddler. I'd teach a Sunday school class, and I'd belong to the home demonstration club, you know, and the circle meeting and singing the choir. And I had to be Miss Big Shot, you know, and do all these things, and then doing this drinking on Saturday night. And I had, the big book says that women, it progresses faster with us sometimes. But I had a very few short years of drinking. And I didn't want to be this way, and pretty soon people started, and I hid my drinking. I'd get up and slip out of the house to the bootleggers at night, and to this dear black lady, and she'd play the piano for me, and I could sit there and drink, and then I'd go home before time to get the kids ready to go to school the next morning. And I'm being this perfect mother, you know. I'm not gonna do one, because mama loved these boys more than she did me. This was my feeling. And I'm gonna be a great parent in both of their rooms. I'm not gonna do one for one that I can't do for the other. So I'm spending a half an hour in one room, and I'm down at the school every day, you know, every few days checking on my kids. And I loved my two children. And then after a while, they made me president of that PTA association. And about this time, I was having ulcer problems and nerve problems and doing my drinking, and the doctor had given me some of this phenobarbital, and I used to have to take about four of them to preside at those PTA meetings. And things are happening, and you see the law. I never thought I'd lie to you. I'd be laying out drunk and swear I hadn't had a drink. You know, this was the way I was. I was a liar. The deputy sheriffs would get me, because I'd get in the car and lock all the doors and drive, and didn't nobody know I was drinking. They'd get me, but they'd take me home. Everybody knew me, and I'd get out of it. But things, alcoholism, this husband and mine, it progressed rapidly, and the fighting began, and the hiding the booze, and living, two practicing alcoholics, and he's stealing it, you know, and drinking it, and the kids are pouring it out, and mama, she's in on it, and it's just a mess. I had one heck of a time getting something to drink. It was really hard work. It's so much easier to stay sober. It really is. But things are getting bad, and we decide we need to move away from our parents and get out on our own. Of course, you take this little, I'd never hardly been off the tobacco farm except to work in the beauty shop, and no farther away than Raleigh, you know, to go to beauty school 50 miles from Sanford. And we moved to Jacksonville, Florida. See, my husband, he's lost his job, and I'm fixing to lose mine. I'd always quit right before the firing came. And we moved down there, and all these bars, and you take a little old country girl hadn't ever seen a bar, and put her in Jacksonville, Florida, over there on East Main Street or wherever it was. But we were going to start over. This is the story of my life, starting over. And we weren't going to drink. It was going to be different. And I got a good job and passed the Florida State Board, and it lasted 6 weeks, and we were drunk. And my husband, he would go to the bars, and I'd go look for him. And we'd have this collie dog, and Lassie would follow me and wait outside for me. This thing just ended. We stayed down there 9 months, I think, and I called my mother, and I never had any money. And I said, Mama, the house is burned up with all of our money, and we don't have anything and no way to come home. And so, you know, a liar. She sent the money, and we spent that before we left, and the stopping at restaurants and begging for food for these kids. And this is hell. And these two little children are hurting. And we moved back into the house the parents had given us to start over again. And we're going back to church, and it's going to be different. And we last 6 months, and by this time, people are finding out about my drinking and my friends, in the community and in the church. And see, they're giving me these jobs in the church to try to help me. And I'm telling this little old preacher that I've got nerve problems. And he's buying all of Norman Vincent Peale's books and bringing me to read them. And I can't read and understand nothing. And I'm just in a mess. And I don't know what's wrong with me. And I still hadn't heard of an alcoholic. Or, you know, I didn't know anything about this. But anyway, things start. And then I open up a little home beauty shop. And that's, you know, drinker's paradise. I could get the toothache and the flu and cancel out everybody and drink and get on that telephone, you know, and everybody'd know I was drunk. But anyway, this lasted, I think we stayed dry about 6 months this time, and we were off to the races again, and my husband, he'd wrote a few bad checks around town, and he went away to a brother's at Fayetteville, 30, 40 miles away, and I decided to leave the kids with him, with my mother, and go with him, and my first encounter with JLO was in Jacksonville, Florida. This was one of the nights I was looking for him and ran up on him, and the police was getting him. And I ran up there and said, "You can't do this to him." They didn't know who I was. I could say some choice language when I was drinking. I mean, some dillies, and I'm telling them all this. And they just locked me up for profanity and public drunk. And I tell them my name's Genevieve McMurray. I don't know where I got that from. And they tried you real fast there, and like in 2 or 3 hours, and I'm still drunk, don't remember much about it, and sent me on out to the farm for 10 days, and then my sister-in-law, they couldn't find me. But they did, I got out of that. But anyway, after this Fayetteville deal, he moved down there to run away, and I was going with him. And this was my first real time to get in jail. And this was Fort Bragg, you know, the army camp. And Mama had always said those soldiers was mean people around down there. And it was bad girls there and all of this. And they locked me up, and it was a big jail. A lot of women in there, you know. And they put me in a cell by myself. They was protecting these other girls. You know, I went in there with a butcher knife. I don't know how I got that in. But I'd been charged with driving under the influence by this state trooper that I didn't know from right around Sanford. And then my husband found out I was there and wrote the bondsman a bad check to get me out of jail. And we ran away to Norfolk, and I came back to Fayetteville, and the bondsman saw us, so they just put me back there and gave him 30 days for the bad check. But anyway, I finally called my parents, and my father came for me, and he said that I had an old charge in Sanford, that this little new policeman that didn't know me or something, and he told me to forget about it, and he would too, but Daddy found out about it and said, "You got to go pay it off." So this was two drunk driving charges, one day in one county, one in the next, and they just wrote from Raleigh and said, "Send your driver's license in for 4 years." And this is a blow to the, you know, to this alcoholic's ego when she's hauling the preacher's wife around that don't have any driver's license and teaching these little kids and at Sunday school and going to the picnics and all, you know, all this stuff at church. And when you get a drunk driving in Sanford, a little small town, they have this Sanford Hurl there, and it comes out about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And they put your name and your address and your age and everything right there. And when you've been convicted of drunk and driving and they put it in that newspaper, you've had it. There's no more hiding it then. And then they, you know, this is the gossip. So I've got to come down. And then by this time I'm still going to church and they're singing "Just As I Am," you know, this hymn, and I'm running up to the altar every 2 weeks. And they're praying for me, and I'm asking God to help me stop drinking, and I'm thinking I'm gonna be all right 2 or 3 weeks, I'm drunk again, and this is when I'm through with God. I was not worth his help. And this, after this federal, things are coming to an end. This was in 1962. We went back to my parents because we didn't ever have any money. And we stayed there for till August, and we were to move out on our own to start over again. And if you'd, been with my mama from January till August and hadn't had a drink, this called for a little celebration, and we did. And this is how booze affected me. Within 24 hours after I had that first drink of gin, here I was, about 25 miles out of Sanford, wanting to die, wondering why I did it. Didn't want to be this way, couldn't understand. And here I am sitting over, not on the main 87 highway to Fort Bragg from Sanford, where the traffic is, but I'm sitting about a mile off of there in the middle of a dirt road, wanting a car to come along and run over me and just kill me. I don't want to live. And don't, but, you know, just the people that live down there is the only traffic. And it's not likely you're going to get run over. So someone calls Mama. She's in on everything. And the sheriff comes. And they lock me up for safekeeping. And two doctors come in. And I hadn't even been, hadn't drank long enough to have a hangover. And they come in to see how you're shaking and ask you all these dumb questions. And Mama goes over to the courthouse and signs a legal commitment paper to put you in John Umstead Hospital, which is a division of Dix Hill, our state hospital, for observation to see if you're sane or not. And I'm committed for temper tantrum. That's the eye conduct deputy into showing me, and that's what they had on there, temper tantrum. And the psychiatrist, and I could have been helped then, but I wasn't ready. And I told him that if he'd just get Mama over there and keep her about 30 days and get her straightened out, my life would be all right. And I believed this. I believed it with all my heart. And that husband, he needed to be there too. And I believed this. So I got along fine and didn't need any tranquilizer or anything, I was physically. But anyway, I stayed 2 weeks, and I decided that I didn't want to stay there, and I'm on a legal commitment too, my husband's visiting me, and we're going out drinking beer. I'm a good girl, and we drink beer all day, and I get by with that and come back, and they don't find out, and they're letting me go on these leaves. So I stayed 2 weeks, and this was Labor Day of 1962, and we decide we're going to put me in a decent hospital, Duke Hospital, to get this ulcer surgery that the doctor had been talking to me about having, and because I don't need to be in no asylum. And, we don't have any money, but I go by Duke to check in, and they give me some nerve pills and sleeping pills, and then we pass the liquor store over in Chapel Hill and get us a pint or two or whatever money we had, I'm on unauthorized leave from this hospital. And my thinking is, we don't have any money, and I know my mama's got money in the bank. I've helped her with her book work and stuff, and used to help her sign her checks and all this. And a mama that didn't love her only daughter any more than to put her in the insane asylum needed some checks wrote on her. And she deserved it, me broke and in that nut house. And, oh, God, and this girl, I used to have this girl to write her letters and tell her how pitiful I was there with these crazy people. This was a nut ward. And this unauthorized leave lasted for 3 weeks. I forged checks, my husband and I. Combination thing, and wrote these checks on her. We'd been to Florida and back twice, and this takes money. And when the sheriff finally got up with me to take me back to the hospital, because they look for you when you committed a patient. And I thought I'd been gone 3 days, and I stayed on there a few days longer and was released and diagnosed as emotionally unstable. And I didn't find out what that was until I got to AA either. And I went home to find out that the sheriff came and arrested me for forgery. Because, you know, when you sign somebody else's name, I just signed Mrs. J.M. Smith Prudy to her check, and Mama didn't pay it off. And thank God for this. And I was arrested, and Uncle posted bond, and the trial came up next March. My husband, he was companion with it. He was charged with the same thing. And forgery and uttering, and we were tried, and this, the sheriff and all these good friends told Mama, you know, they're going to scare us into stopping drinking, and because we're worrying everybody to death. He's beating me, you know, and chasing me with a butcher knife and plugging the electric iron in, getting it hot to hit me with, and it's just a miracle, and I'm standing here, and the ambulance, neighbors are calling the ambulance, and it's just a big mess, and we are... So they put us on this probation, give us 3 to 5 years with 5 years probation, and put a special clause in there, no drinking, and give me a woman probation officer and him a man probation officer, and them saying you can't drink. And I told her that I did have to have beer in the beauty shop because this was a thing then for excessive oil and body for the hair, you know, and I won't aim to put it on nobody's hair. And she's there, what time one's not at the door, the other one is, and you got this husband, and he calls him up and says, you're drunk, and he's not. You know, he's telling on you. And you can imagine what a mess this is. And these two little children's hurting, and they can't bring friends home. And it's sad after 15 years of marriage. I just got sick of him calling, telling on me, and I called him and said, we're both drunk, just come on and let's get on with it, you know. Go to Raleigh or whatever you're going to do. And I didn't know about no prisons and things, you know. This was stuff you read about, and I didn't know what this was really about. And so naive and stupid. And so they came. But it's sad after 15 years of marriage, a little 13-year-old girl and 11-year-old boy. And two deputy sheriffs come and pick up the mother and father and carry them to jail to revoke their probation. The father, Sheriff Holder himself, he's been sheriff there in this county and friend of our family for 33 years, he carried him by Central Prison and carried me to Woman's Prison in Raleigh. And this is where I found Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful. I wouldn't undo one thing that has happened to me. I'm so grateful for this. And when you went there, you were interviewed when you were a felon. And you were interviewed by the superintendent or the assistant superintendent. And she says, Gertrude, it looks like your record says you might have a little problem with drinking. You know, and I said, I don't know, but I'm smart, you know, and Sheriff Holder said, Gertrude, I shouldn't be bringing you here, but there's nothing else to do with you, but you'll be all right, and you won't have to stay long, and they'll be good to you here, and they were, and this lady says, you can go to Alcoholics Anonymous here, and I did, and this old Wheels attorney, you know, if I go to Alcoholics Anonymous and be good, they let me out. And this is what I wanted, and this is why I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, is to get a parole out of prison. And this is what it was about. It doesn't matter what you come here for. I think to get your wife back or whatever, just so you get here. And I go, and they put me to work in the hospital, and I get along fine. And there's a load lifted then. There's this thing is beginning to work, And I realized that my life has been unmanageable. I didn't realize it was because of alcohol, though, by any means yet. And they had a lot of the big book and the 12 and 12 and a lot of literature there. And I read this stuff, all of it, everything. And here I'm sitting there in the penitentiary thinking, you know, I just might be a potential alcoholic. Well, I get a parole in 9 months, so day after I'm eligible, I'm out the next day, and I go back to Sanford, and my parole officer meets me, and I've chosen an outside AA sponsor, and This guy, Tom I, was the first person I ever heard talk about AA. And Tom said that it was tough on a woman being an alcoholic with a prison record and getting out of there and staying sober, and it was one heck of a job. And so Tom, he looked around in Sanford and got me this sponsor, this great guy. And we went by the drugstore where he was, the parole officer, and he wasn't there. And I didn't know nobody else in AA there, but my parole officer said, this was on a Thursday, and he said, there's a meeting tomorrow night. This was on March the 5th, 1964. And says, there's a meeting tomorrow night. And you go. So, and I know I've got to do something, and I think I want this program, and I don't know what, and I don't believe anything you tell me. Some of those women, but I didn't know what that love didn't have a price tag on it, I found out those people that was bringing that AA program out to the prison, they weren't getting paid for it, you know? They're just coming, and it might be a little something to them. And, this old gal came from Greensboro, Frances S., and she didn't like her mama. And I perked up and listened to that, you know. I heard a few things, but I went to this meeting in this little long brick walkway. Mama carried me, and I went walking up there, and I was scared to death. And got in there, and it was 40 men and no women. And you know, I knew every one of them though. And then I'd known these people all my life, but I didn't know they'd gone to AA. And they said, Gertrude, honey, we've been waiting for you a long time. And these were just a big bunch of daddies and brothers, and they loved me. And these were the first people that understood me, and I felt comfortable with in my whole life. And I went to, they go to meetings every night and on intergroup Sunday afternoon. So I was making sometimes 8 meetings a week, and they go out of town and to meetings. And Claude M., with us old timer, 20 years sobriety, and he got me under his wing, and he said, you always sit on the front row, Gertrude, because you are one of the sickest ones I've ever seen. And you don't need to miss nothing. And you're just so hard-headed. And I went for 6 months and went in. I realized this marriage couldn't work. I went into court for a divorce and went home. After 6 months of this pink cloud and this beautiful program, to get drunk again. Within 2 weeks, I'd spent a week of that in the hospital, and Mom had called the chairman of the parole board in Raleigh, didn't bother with my parole officer, and said, she's drunk, y'all better come get her. And they did. And I was to go back again to think that I was just nothing but a failure, and I tried everything. And I couldn't see these two little children when I was in prison. This little girl ran away and got married, barely. She wasn't quite 16. And then Mama, she hired a lawyer to get me back out after she'd put me in there on another parole. And here I am bouncing in and out of the penitentiary. And they give me another one if I'll get a job in another place and don't go back to Mama's, you know, we can't get along. So they let me go to Raleigh. This dear sweet Al-Anon gave me a room, and I was going to AA, and they got me this job in a beauty shop at $35 a week plus commission, and I resented this, and because I could have been making, you know, that half a day for myself, and I didn't like this. And that parole board, they's just determined to stop me from drinking, and if I was going to get sober, I was going to get credit for it. They won't. And how you going to stay sober with an attitude like this? I didn't. I met my present husband, Vernon, in Raleigh in AA then. And this parole lasted 3 months. I was carried back to, I did every day of this sentence, 2 years and 6 days. And I always go back to AA. And Vernon wrote to me, and we decided we'd get married, Bernie was talking about I was a dreamer, you know, and we were going to live these fairy tales, and we were going to get married, and I was going to have this alcoholic husband, and he was going to take care of me and understand me, and we were going to this AA and live happy ever after. Well, this was the 9th of April in 66 that we were married, And Mother's Day came, and I wasn't with my children. And I was sorry for me, and I got drunk. And this fine alcoholic husband, AA husband that I had that wasn't going to pour out my booze and let me drink in peace, he got drunk with me. And we moved back to his hometown, and I'd always come back to AA, and I kept getting these white chips. And we moved back there, you know, and I'm going to be the good wife, and here's where I joined a Baptist church and get another Sunday school class. And I'm worrying about when these little kids going to ask me if I've been in jail, you know. And you know, this is not comfortable. But I stayed dry 15 months there. And then we both got drunk and then back to Dix Hill. His mother sent us, and both of us, and we stayed a week. And I always get picked up for this drunk driving and or go to Dix Hill. I believe it was just Dix Hill this time. And we stayed a week, and this is when we moved to Raleigh in January of 68. And this is where I started going to the Big Book group. Vernon liked it over there. No, I had got picked up for drunk driving, too, because, you see, he'd already lost his license for 4 years and didn't have any before we were married, and I was fixing to lose mine, and we'd been going to visiting all these groups from Anger. We just lived 15 miles out of Raleigh, and we'd been visiting all these, going to two groups there, and we decided it was a lot of groups in town we hadn't been to, and that we'd like to visit before I lost my driver's license, because we could ride the city bus and walk to two of them, you know, but because it was coming. And Vernon liked it over at this Big Book group, and I didn't. I thought those people were crazy. You know what they did every Thursday night? This was when they met on Thursday night. They'd just take one of those 12 steps, and that's all they talk about. And I thought, God, they're dumb. You know, can't learn any more than that. Have to keep going over and over and over. And I don't belong here, but I'll stay and pacify Vernon. And we did, and Vernon, he got a sponsor. And I didn't have one. I used to would have told you I had five or six sponsors, and it took that many for me, but that's not the way it is either. Because if I've got five or six women I can talk to, one of them will tell me I'm thinking right, and then I'm not, you know, tell me what I want to hear. And I hadn't ever had a sponsor before, and Vernon got this one, Vernon and his sponsor was sitting there talking one day, and I didn't have sense enough to, and I know I wouldn't have never been as weak that week at that time, as sick as I was, to get this sponsor that I've got. But they were sitting there talking, and I said I didn't have a sponsor. And Vernon and him decided he'd be my sponsor, and he's Dave Cook from Raleigh. He don't care if I break his anonymity. Because, honey, he's great, but he sure don't tell me what I want to hear. And I stay mad at him. It's gotten better, but I used to. Three-fourths of the time, I wouldn't even speak to the man. I'd call him, and I had little enough sense to call him, and he'd always tell me what I didn't want to hear, you know. And it was usually whatever my problem was. He said, get the Big Book and read chapter 5, you know. And we just, Vernon and I, it's not perfect. And I don't have to be perfect. And I learned this in AA, and thank God I don't have to be perfect. And this is beautiful. And we fight, and Dave comes and referees these fights. And one night he said, Vernon, we can't settle the argument. And he said, Vernon, get your Big Book. Gertrude, you get yours. Read a whole chapter. Don't speak to each other another time tonight, and go to bed. That works. But, you see, after 18 months at this group, Vernon drank again, and I got so busy getting, you know, playing God and getting him sober, and I got drunk with him. And I hope this will be, I hope and pray this was my last drunk. This is a drunk that I like to talk about and that I remember that's just as vivid as if it happened this morning. I just called a cab that time. I'd been drinking 2 weeks and called a cab and went to Dix Hill. Just said, what? no good in wearing these AAs, Bob. They didn't get me drunk. You know, I've learned that much for this time, and I'll just go on by myself. And I did. They didn't have, I was going to psychiatric, I had any hospital insurance, but I was going to psychiatric unit, you know, Little Dix Hill, but at the, over at the hospital, and they didn't have a bed. I said, just send me on Dix Hill, and I did, and I stayed over there 2 weeks and came out and started drinking again. And this was my last drinking. This is what I like to remember. The more I drank, I could not find this oblivion. I could not find nothing no more. It was just like pouring it in a sponge. I'd lost my business. I'd been able to open a little shop in Raleigh. I'd lost it again. And I had nothing going for me. I just stored the equipment, said, to hell with a beauty shop, the whole mess, you know. And I'm going to have a peaceful day of drinking, and I go out half lit, you know, and I apply for a job and get it in a larger beauty shop and said, I'm not. And I said, I'll be into work Tuesday morning, and here I am still drinking, you know. And I'm going to have one more. I've got to go to that job, and it's on Monday morning, June the 15th. And I carried running to work. And I've got another drunk driving charge this time, too. And I'm another charge pending. And I'm going to have one peaceful day of drinking. I'm going to get me this six-pack, and I'm going to drink today in peace before I go to that new job tomorrow. And this is after 3 weeks of drinking, and I'm sick. Nothing stays down. I can't eat, you know, those raw eggs. And I guess you get those down. They even come back. And God, and the honey, you boil the water and get it in the so you can get drink it. This is how I came off of this last drunk. But anyway, this morning, Bill Jay's face flashed before me, and I'd heard him say at one of these meetings that God loved him as much as he did anyone else on the screen. That he was one of God's children. Whether he was bad, good, or indifferent, it didn't matter. And this came before me. And I thought maybe, just maybe, God loved me enough to help me. I fell on my knees this Monday morning and asked, I'd already had one can of that beer, and asked God to please help me for the first time in my life without telling him how to do it, you know. I just do anything because I'm nothing but a zero. A failure. A successful failure, that's what I was. And things started happening. These first three steps, they came that day. I just turned it over to God, and I gave up. The remainder of that beer sat in the refrigerator, and I didn't have to drink it. And for the first time, I knew that God was doing for me this which I could not do for myself. I went on back to my group that Thursday. I didn't go to a meeting till Thursday. I went to that job the next morning after having to be hospitalized before. And don't tell me you got to go to these hospitals and you can't come off of it, because I did after this 3 weeks. Went to a brand new job not knowing anybody within a 12 operators in that shop the next morning to go to work. I did an awful lot of going to the bathroom and saying, God help me, you know. And I'd come out and I'd do a customer and I made it. And I went on back that Thursday night and Dave says, you get your white chips and you pick them up like you're supposed to, and by God, you're gonna make it. I didn't see how. And I did, and things started happening in my life, and I realized for the first time I was comfortable. This feeling of well-being, and I couldn't understand it. Things just kept happening, and I lost my driver's license, and this old sponsor, he's tough. Thank God for this too. Not only would he not offer us a ride to a meeting, he told everybody in the group, make them call and ask for a ride. Don't offer to come get them. And we'd fight over who was going to do the calling for the ride. And this was good for me. It really was. And he made us go to the retreats. And he said, we don't have the money. He said, you had money to drink with. And you go over to Durham if it's 20 miles away and stay there. And this was good. And this is how our AA has been, with four of these retreats a year. And in Vernon, when the assembly meetings. And things start happening. And, you know, these crises come up. And my son, I get my little boy back that I had lost all these years, and he's going to stay with me and go to college. over to state, and I treat him just like he's that little 11-year-old boy, and he's 18 now. He'd stayed with my mother and graduated from high school. He went a year and quit, and I had to say, get out, this tough love, you know. And he got out and got in the drug scene, got arrested, 2 felony charges, placed on probation. And I thought I couldn't stand this. And God, you know, He closes doors and opens others in my life all the time. And the little girl that had run away and got married moved to Raleigh. A little grandson was born 35 days after I got sober. I have a little 2-year-old granddaughter, and their granny's never had to drink. And this is beautiful. And the daughter came to Raleigh to live with a little grandson, and I got busy with her, and you know, and didn't worry about the son so much. I was able to let God take him, put him in God's hands. And then she says, Mama, I want to go to beauty school. She'd done secretarial work. She'd gone on and finished high school. And so she did, and we got her through beauty school, and she came to work with me. And this was just the beautiful relationship to have both of my children back near me. This son made his probation and was released from it. He was married. He's divorced. The daughter, she's divorced. And last Saturday, we had her this beautiful little church wedding that I'd promised her when she was a little girl. She's 27 now. And she's been on her honeymoon, and I've been babysitting all week for this 7-year-old, and things just happened. But you know, when this surrender came, I had to learn that my sobriety, it could not depend upon people and things. It had to depend upon my higher power. And this pipeline has got to stay open. This channel has got to be clear. And any time that I'm uncomfortable, there's something wrong with me, I'm away, I'm not doing my program, I've learned this. And these resentments, they're my number one offenders. I usually, the resentments come, and if I can just stop and sit down and check it and take an inventory, I have to take so many inventories because I'm lax on my step 10. And one of the most beautiful things that happened to me was in 1971. Vernon, he leaves me every once in a while, you know. He just can't stand to be around me. And he moves out and he rents up and he comes back. And we got a strange marriage, but it's so much good there. But we went to Blue Ridge. He had just moved out, and I have to be forced into things. If I was comfortable, I wouldn't never get anything done in this program. And I just have to hurt and hurt, you know, until I'm get ready to get with it. So he'd left me, and I'm worrying about how I'm going to make the house payment. And I called Dave, and he said, when is it due, Gertrude? I said, in 2 weeks. He said, that's not today. And you're supposed to be living today. And these little simple things, but I went to Blue Ridge, and right after doing this fourth step, and I'm still not honest yet, you know, I get growing honesty. And we go up there, and Neva G was on this program, and she talked at length about this fourth and fifth step. I'd been sober 14 months. And I had wanted to talk to this woman, but I couldn't bring myself to do it. And that the conference was ending, and on Sunday morning at breakfast in Lee Hall, she came and sat down beside me. This wasn't coincidence. And the conversation came up that I'd gone back to drinking so many times since coming to this program. And she says, do you know why you have gone back to drinking? And I said, no, and I didn't know. She said, you've never done a fourth and fifth step. But you see, I have, because I'd pretended to do one when I was going over there to that group, because I couldn't ever say anything if I didn't start, you know, pretending I was doing them steps. I would have never got to talk any at that group. Because they just want your experience, you know. They don't want, that's all they ask for when they go around and tell you, hey, what's your experience with this step? And if you didn't have any, but I pretended I did it, you know. I'd called a preacher up and made an appointment and gone up there. And Neva, she looked at me. She said, who'd you do? I said, I did a fourth and fifth step. She said, who'd you do a fifth step with?
I said, a preacher in Raleigh? She looked at me right now and she said, bull. She said, there's no way a woman alcoholic's going to tell a man all she's done wrong, much less a preacher. She said, would you like to go with me and tell me what you didn't tell the preacher? And she started off by, she said, I've done everything wrong in the book but one thing, y'all, and I've done that. And that was a good starting point. And all this garbage fell out that I'd had locked up for 30 years. And she said, if you left, my inventory was still at home. And she says, you go back and you look over, and if you've left out and you write it to Texas to me, you know. And I'm still thinking, she's from Texas and ain't going to tell nothing in Raleigh anyway, so it's all right to tell her. And she, I don't know, my AA life is just great. I have been outside sponsor for the women's prison group, and it's, those gals can't fool me. God, they got telephones on the grounds over there now, and they used to censor all my letters, and I'd write ugly things home and have to wait until next week to say I'm sorry, you know, and couldn't write but three letters a week. And this is great to tell them, you know, to understand and to communicate with them. And I love this prison group. But just about 4 years ago, you know, this gal that had given me this job in this beauty shop in Raleigh, she's in the throes of this illness. And she doesn't know, she will not accept the fact that she's got a problem. But anyway, I was offered this beauty shop that I'd been paroled to 8 years before. I didn't know what to do it. I didn't, with those six chairs, Diane and I were doing fine with our relationship, and we were just doing, getting along fine, and I didn't want no to do, you know, I don't like changes. And I called Dave and says, what am I going to do? And he don't make my decisions for me, you know. He knows me. Because if it don't turn out right, it's his fault. But he never tells me. He'll guide and direct me. And I said, what should I do? He said, well, I guess you more on your feet to fail than you ever been before. And we, I got get this beauty shop, and all I know to do is ask God to help me, because I can't keep up with them quarterly reports and taxes and licenses and all that stuff. And I'm going to give it a try. And this is the way it's worked. The four girls that work with me, the three and my daughter, they all know that I'm in AA. My daughter's on her honeymoon. We messed up, you know, planning for me to be off, but we've got someone working in our place, And it just works great. And to go to these meetings in my group, they let this old check writer be secretary and treasurer for 3.5 years, you know. And trusted me with the money, and they formed a corporation, and we're going to try to get us a building born, and then they elected me secretary and treasurer of that. And we got some land and got about $5,000 in the bank, I think. And now here I've got the checkbook. And I've come a long ways. And this mother of mine, I've made, doing these 12 steps, these are my life, and I have to go over and over and over them. And I've made my amends, and I went and I talked to my mother, and I thanked her. I thanked her for helping to send me to the penitentiary and letting me go and letting me face life and giving me this gift to find this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have my brother that's 2 years younger than I is in AA. He was here 3.5 years and went back out. He's back now with 90 days sobriety. This mother, I went to her and thanked her and made my amends. This ex-husband, we can talk about our children because I have been back and told him that I was sorry for the things I had done to him and the failure I played the part in that marriage. And just a year ago, this past January, my mother was sick. And we carried her into Duke Hospital. She was getting worse in her hands. And we carried her in for evaluation. And she stayed there 9 days, and I visited her. And I went in, and the doctor had left word he wanted to see me. And he told me that my mother had multiple myeloma, which is bone cancer,
And as best they could tell, she had about a year to live. And God, this hurt. That to think that my first thought was the hell I'd put this woman through. Because you don't know, in the middle of the nights, the phone calls, I'd keep her awake and she'd have to go to work. And the time she'd want me to go to church, and I was so mean and ugly, and I'd go with her drunk and sit beside her at revival and embarrass her. And I had all this stuff, you know. But my second thought was, but God has let her see me sober almost 6 years. And I went in to this woman, my mother. She missed her first Sunday from church in 28 days and 28 years there in the hospital. This is the kind of mother I've got. And not long ago, she came to visit me, and I'm able, thank God, didn't have a driver's license, and I can take her back and forth for chemotherapy. And I can go to see her, and I went to see her last Sunday. And perhaps this is the last Mother's Day I'll have her, but I was with her last Sunday. And she says, you go on. And she was visiting me, and she told me, she said, honey, you are today what I've always wanted you to be, and Alcoholics Anonymous has made you that way. I want to thank y'all for letting me share my experience, strength, and hope with you. And thank you for giving me a life and loving me. And God bless each one of you, and I love you dearly. Thank you.